Okay. Oh, it's Joe Fish from Matamidi. This is Joe Fish from Matamidi. The following podcast may contain offensive language, descriptions of violence, and the occasional use of the N-word.
Under the sun, everything has been done. Now is all that ever is. So celebrate this precious gift. With each breath, I become one is all. All is one. We return to where we're from. Nothing new under the sun.
Welcome to Sticks and Stones. My name is Jason Nevels.
I'm David Jeffries. And today in studio with us, we have Willie Lee, who is running for the Minneapolis City Council in Ward 12. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So about myself. Well, let's start with, I'm not really a politician. I sat around and kept looking for who was going to run in the 12th Ward. It's been a hell of a year, right?
Yes, it has.
And there was so much momentum, and I thought we were finally going to get some real work done in defunding the police. And a veto-proof majority stood up there in Powderhorn, and they're like, yeah, we're going to get this done. And then we saw all that momentum fade, you know? And, you know, my opponent, the incumbent, was up there, and Andrew stood up there, and he was going to defund the police, and what I've seen since has not really inspired me. And so I was looking for someone who was going to really bring that energy and really keep that momentum. And I kept wanting it to be someone else.
Right.
And by the day that you needed to file to contest the DFL endorsement, nobody else had stepped up for that. And so I threw my name in. I'm totally new to politics. I work at the U in a technology field, and, you know, this is all new to me, but I'm willing to do the work, and I got a lot to learn, but here we are.
Man, here we are, right?
Right.
Crash.
Yeah.
Trial by fire.
Right?
So tell me a little bit about the response you've gotten from Ward 12, and then maybe you can tell our listeners where Ward 12 is in relation to the rest of Minneapolis.
Yeah, so geographically, I would say it's in the southeast part of Minneapolis by the cardinal directions, but southeast, you know, by the street signs means over here by the U. And so we're talking around, like, centered around Lake Nokomis, that whole chunk of Minneapolis. So you've got, it's kind of in the corner there with Cedar as one boundary up to the mid-30s and then down to the city border.
Right.
And so,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why I think maybe the viewers would like to know why Willie is here, not just because Willie's
blonde hair, blue eyes, all the way.
Yeah, that totally describes me to a T.
They don't look like that.
So true. So true.
So, Willie, I live in the 12th Ward, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know who was going to run against Andrew.
Sure.
And I wanted to make sure that I knew what they were about.
Yeah.
What they did, their history, or just, you know, what kind of candidates were out there.
Yeah.
And so I stumbled across you. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. So here we are.
Awesome.
He had to come on. Keith Ellison was on. He's like, well, might as well throw a bulb in there.
Yeah, that's totally, you know, same story. Same exact story.
Big shot lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. Big shot lawyer. Been up and coming for however long. I don't know when he was on, but, you know, up and coming for however long.
Bob Kroll's got to go to jail.
Whatever happened to that dude? He said he was going to retire, and I haven't
heard
anything.
He left.
He boned out early.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he dipped.
We were writing on the wall.
Yeah, he was next, man. And you know what? We were just talking about that, too, where, man, we're still paying that dude's pension, man. That dude gets a pension from us.
You know, it's really easy to get worked up about those things. But if you said, Willie, we got to pay this dude this much money and he'll just go away, I'd do it.
You would do it?
Yeah. For him to go away. Like, you know, I think a lot of times
it's like a crackhead. You can just give him a couple of dollars. Get the hell out of here, man.
Right? Right?
It's hey, will you get off my corner? You get a couple bucks.
It's my own form of harm reduction. I'm willing to pay people to just go away. And I think, like, actually, when we start thinking about defunding the police, like, a lot of times you get hung up on these ideas, right? Right. These ideas of how much is it going to cost and, like, how much money are we going to waste?
Right.
But, like, I think of that as part of the cost of it, right?
Right.
Like, there are all these obligations we're going to have. And with the union, with the contracts and all of that. But, like, what I care about is reducing the contact of cops with guns with the people in Minneapolis, right?
That's real talk.
And if I got to keep paying them for some number of years because of a contract, I'm not going to let that stop me. I'm not going to be like, hey, I paid for this, so you better walk around with guns and, like, pull people over because they didn't signal their turn and then, like, search the car and then beat the shit out of them. Like, that ain't it.
Right, right.
And so, like, yeah, we're paying Bob Kroll, but he went away.
He did.
And that's a win, right?
He did.
And if that win cost me some money, it's like, well, yeah.
Well, so talk a little bit about your platform.
Yeah, so really the reason I jumped into this race is I felt like we were going to lose that momentum to defund the police, and that is absolutely number one, the thing I'm going to put my time, energy, and just pure love right into. We have to get this done. You know, if you talk to anyone else that doesn't live in Minneapolis, they say, oh, yeah, the city council, they just defunded the police, and now, like, it's just not safe to be in Minneapolis. I'm like, wait a second, we didn't defund nothing. And I would like to get there before you start telling your lies. And so
there's a lot of them. I see people think that defund the police means to abolish the police, and it doesn't. It's not the same thing.
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And but at the same time, like, I love this conversation. You know, people go around and around about it. And, you know, they're always looking for the right word. And it seemed like people who were saying abolish scared a bunch of people. And then people were saying defund, whatever. I think about this in two steps, right? We do the work to defund now, right? We look at ways that we can take part of their budget and do the things that they're wrongfully assigned to do,
right,
and do it better.
Yep.
So, like, you ask pretty much anyone, they're like, yeah, we should totally have mental health response teams that go help people who are having a mental health crisis. And, you know, if you say that, people are like, yeah, I'm on board, right? Mm-hmm. They get a little scared when you say, but I want to take that money from the police and kind of, like, cut down their numbers so I can pay for these other people. But people can get behind that, right? When we start thinking about abolition, then people get really scared. They're like, what do you do about murderers? What do you do about, like, and these big questions, right? But one of the things that I try and hold on to is that I think it's really important to dream about, like, what's the big world I want to see? Like, at the end of my life, what do I want it to look like, right? And I love Star Trek. I'm not going to get too far into how much I love Star Trek.
Me too. But I'm a Trekkie, man.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, you think about how, like, there's a world that's not quite post-police, but it's pretty dang close, right?
Right.
And, like, we need to be able to hold those big dreams, right?
Right.
Like, last city election, Jacob Fry could, like, have this big dream of ending homelessness, and you're like, that's a pretty big dream, right? But people didn't call him out for that.
No,
right?
They didn't.
And so, like, for me to say my big dream is a world where we don't have this violent policing, and that I abolish the police, and maybe there's something else that looks kind of like police, but isn't, like, that's my big dream.
Judge
and I'm
Dredd.
Not gonna, right? Yeah.
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd.
That's a little in the other direction.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I was like, wait, Judge Dredd. No.
Well, you know, I think that the problem with the whole idea behind policing in the first place is it's just based on white supremacy.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like if you say abolish police, then what you really mean is get rid of white supremacy. And America holds on to that shit like a dug in tick, dude. Mm-hmm. They will not let that shit go.
No.
Because they're scared because, you know, it goes back to they think brown people are going to treat them the same way they've been doing brown people forever. And that's what they fear the most. And that's just not true. Because if it was true, you know, all these, you know, like all these suburban people who are scared of the city would be getting killed a lot more when they came down here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just doesn't happen.
No, it's not happening. It's not happening. So when you talk about abolishing the police, and you talk, and you pointed out some really specific pieces that we do need help with around mental health, and not having a police officer show up to provide mental health services for someone who is really just, you know, struggling, and it could be a threat to themselves and others, but they don't need a police response. And often, sometimes that then...
It makes it worse.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you said having people who specifically do that work answer those calls, and then reimagining what the police department actually looks like actually making it work better for the citizens of the city.
Yeah, except, you know, except we're going to call it a public safety department.
Right.
You know, because one of the keys is to really kind of remove that. We're not trying to shift the police, you know. What we're trying to do is actually, like, replace those things with something new.
Right.
And it's important to think about this. So a lot of people talk about this whole idea of, like, I want to, you know, why don't you just pay for the mental health people and then keep the police the way it is, right? Like, trying to, like, have both pieces of cake, right?
Right.
And, like, it doesn't work like that, because the thing I actually want isn't just the mental health responders or, you know, all these other things, you know, like traffic enforcement without guns. Like, it's not that. It's that I am trying to reduce that contact, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so without getting it down to a smaller number, it doesn't change. But the other thing that's important about that is when you build these new things, they have new culture.
Right.
Right? Like, right now, so... I didn't spend a lot of time with very many cops until I actually moved to the 12th. And one of my neighbors was a retired cop.
Okay.
Right? And this is funny. We share an alley and whatever. I'm brown and wear hoodies and like to come home late at night on my bicycle and whatever.
Right.
And like, I'm just like, oh, this is going to go great. And so I introduced myself. We get like, over the course of a couple of years, we talk a lot about this. And one of the things that's very clear is that there is a culture in policing that has this us against them thing. You see it in the thin blue line flag, Blue Lives Matter. You see it in all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a serious us against them thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that culture is what sets that mindset. It's who they, it's not just who they hire, but it's who can stay in the policing, you know, in the field of policing. Like,
right.
You can hire all these optimistic change makers, but what happens is they get ground down by the system, right? And if we just try and shift that and, like, fiddle with it, we're never going to get there. We have to make these new things and say, these new things are born out of a new population, new people, looks like Minneapolis, you know, believes in the work that we need them to do,
right?
And so none of this reform tweaking has worked anywhere.
No.
And,
A good question about that, too, is could you, you know, sort of talk to people who believe in reform, maybe in Minneapolis, and they say, oh, you know, we need to reform the police, and maybe not all of them need to go away. We just need to reform the police department. I don't think you could retrain Derek Chauvin.
No. No, you
can't.
And
then other cops like him.
Mm-mm.
I don't think there's a chance to do any kind of reconciliation or, you know, like you learn a new technique or... I don't think I think that's done.
I 100% agree. I 100% agree. You can't do that. It doesn't work, you know. You think about, so, you know, for those of you who've had, like, long careers like I have, you know, you think about all the trainings you go through and think about how many of them you take seriously, right?
Right.
Like, I recently had to do our sexual assault awareness, you know,
right,
training. And, like, I got to say, you know, I believe in all those things, but, like, how seriously do I take trainings? Like, how much do they change my life? Even when I completely agree with the content matter.
Right.
Like, it doesn't change, you know, it doesn't change much, right?
Right, it doesn't. It doesn't.
You know, that change comes from coming together around a different goal.
Right.
Right? That change comes from that formative moment when we make culture, like, when we make these things, and we set our ground rules and whatever. And being able to shift those is long, difficult work. And I just don't think that, I don't think that's going to work.
No, I don't think so either. And here's the other piece of that, too. You talked about changing institutions in mm-hmm. the city. The city has a lot of steeped in institutions, man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And some of it is really, most of it is really race-based.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is dug in deep, and it there's a lot of disparities that mm-hmm. go on in the city. So one of your...
Wait, you're talking about this liberal city?
Yeah.
Right. So one of your... Jay, you know. You already know.
Yep.
One of your platforms, items on the platform I saw, too, was around housing.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that, too?
So, you know, this is one of the things that we need to do a much better job of. And, like, there's all this talk right now about how you change, like, the edges of legislation. So, like, people are talking a lot about, like, the 2040 plan and zoning. And, mm-hmm. like, and all of these things are important, mm-hmm. right? But they don't actually solve anything, you know, because the market's not going to pop up a 200-unit apartment building, like, right off of Lake Harriet,
no.
you know, that's affordable. That, like, you and I could just, like, hey, let's get us some penthouse suites up here. Like, that's not going to happen, right? Like, economics makes that impossible. Right.
Right.
But what we can do is we can start looking at things like rent control to like keep the affordable places, you know, as affordable as they are now. It'd be nicer if they were better. But also like changing that bar right now. Like right now, when you build a new building, there's this affordable housing, you know, mm-hmm. where you can get some financing from the city and right. people play into this game. But that number is still too high. Right.
So what's it? You mean the AMI? Affordable median income?
I think so, yeah.
I think that's what it is, right?
Yeah, and it's some percentage of the median income in the Twin Cities. And it's just... It's
so high that it's not average, really.
No.
Because you'd have to be... I mean, honestly, you'd have to be making $100,000 to live in Minneapolis. If the AMI...
Right.
You use the current AMI, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Or at least comfortably, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and... So many people who, you know.
Right?
No, for real.
Why, man?
Right?
So fucked up.
Right. And so, like, thinking about how we can be more aggressive about that number, how we can look at the ways that the city has this leverage.
Yeah.
But then thinking about, like, so Mayor Fry, you know, he was asked about rent control, and he was like, oh, I think the market will figure this out, and, like, blah, blah, blah. And, like, it doesn't work like that. And, you know, one of the things, right? Right. And so, like, one of the things he's thinking is, like, oh, well, you know, when people can't afford it and then they don't buy it, then the price comes down. It's like, this is not how it happens. They just kind of sit on this stuff because there's too much money at the top and people don't actually need to make, like, reasonable economic
decisions.
Dude,
where I live over Northeast, they've probably built, in the last 4 years, 5 or 6 skyrises, all high-end apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot tell me those fucking places are full, and they're building more, and they're
absolutely.
Building more,
yep.
And it's like, okay, where are all these people coming that can afford a closet for $1,700?
Yeah, I was reading this thing on Twitter, and like, you know, you got to separate what's real and what's conspiracy
right.
theory on Twitter, but people were talking about how there's a lot of investment in the Twin Cities, and there was that article in the Star Tribune just this last weekend about it. But some people were saying, you know, Minneapolis being in the middle of the country seems like a good climate refuge. If the world gets hotter, you're like, eh, that's fine in Minnesota, right?
Right.
And you're like, sea water rises? Fine in Minnesota. And yeah. so, like, there's some speculation, right, that as a climate refuge, Minneapolis, like, people are investing in Minneapolis and maybe sitting on some real estate just in case it all goes to heck over there on the coast. And they're just like, yeah, I'm going to move to the land of Prince and, like, eat meatballs or something.
You know why? Because they're like, it's liberal and safe.
Right? Right?
Not.
I mean.
It is safe. I mean,
it's kind of boringly safe. Come on, man.
Relatively.
Relatively. Like, North, I mean, there's a small number of things happening in North. And you know, we got to do something about it. And the mayor, you know, got up there and squawked his little squawk about it. But
he doesn't, but it's to him, it's more police.
Right.
And I don't know if that's necessarily what we're trying to do.
No.
You know?
I mean,
It's all economics.
Yeah, it's all about jobs. It's
always been that.
It's employment.
You want to get rid of crime? Let people have affordable housing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
food
the first
on their
part.
Fucking table.
Or, yeah, and a job that they like.
I mean, even beyond that, you know, like we talk about jobs that you like, but just like being able to survive, right?
Right.
And like whether that's about a job or whether it's about something else, you know, we have to figure out, like, you can't solve like public safety without that, right?
No, you can't. And that is a huge part of public safety, actually.
Oh, absolutely. You need, like, and it's one of the things, you know, to come all the way back around to housing, right?
Right.
Like, I think one of the things that we've seen this year that's been really disheartening is that, you know, people are setting up in encampments and the city is bringing cops. The city is bringing cops to break them down, chase them out. And what does that do? It doesn't make anyone safer. It doesn't make the houseless people that get kicking around any safer. It doesn't make the people who are living right next to that any safer.
No.
All it does is make you feel like you did something so that your constituents, you know, quit calling you.
Right.
But that's not safety. That's not safety at all. You know, we have to figure out, okay, so in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities, we have all these, like, we have a whole bunch of, like, disparate resources. So, like, maybe you could go to Harbor Lights and, like, have a place to sleep, right? But that's run by the Salvation Army. So if you're gay like me, then it's like, can I really go there? Are they really going to accept me? Because Salvation Army isn't with the gays. And so, like, okay, I can't go there. Or other people are like, well, if I go to this other shelter, I have to give up on all the stuff I have. Or right. I can't go with my family. Or I can't go with my, you know.
Right.
And or I have to be dry and clean before I go there. And, like, we are starting backwards, right?
Right.
We're saying you have to do all these things and then you can get a house. But, like, you can't do those things until you feel safe, right?
Right.
And, like, you can't. It can't be done.
No.
And it's just foolish to think otherwise.
I agree.
Hey, this is America. Pull up your bootstraps and get to work.
Right? Right?
I did it. My uncle did it.
Right. I just. Yeah, you
it's
know.
It's not real, man. That's not real.
You lazy sons of bitches.
Right? Yeah, and then the same people are like, oh, man, that homeless guy's got a phone. I'm like, how you get a job if they can't call you back?
Man, listen, everybody has a phone.
I know.
They made sure that everybody could get a phone. Even them Obama phones, man.
I know.
Everybody got some.
Hey, but everybody's worried about the microchip and the vaccination.
Right.
But they have a smartphone in their fucking hand that tells everybody everything about, that they want to know about these.
That's incredible right there. That's incredible.
Right?
That's
right?
Incredible.
Oh, it's great. People are like, oh yeah, that microchip and track you. I'm like, yeah, you just told me that on your smartphone.
You know, another thing I was thinking of while we're sitting here was how the police department and how they currently operate in Minneapolis is a public health threat. And
yes.
Could you maybe even think about adding that to your platform too, like public health? Like what does that look like? Because, you know, with COVID, a lot of things changed,
right?
And it really, really laid bare a lot of the disparities that are already happening in this city for black and brown folks. Talk a little bit about, from that perspective, what it would look like for you being the Ward 12.
Yeah, so there were a lot of public health disasters that happened this year. And I'm not just talking about COVID, but I think a lot of the things that we think about in this, is, like, they're amplified by that. And so, like, you think about all the people who are in prison for, like, stupid shit, you know, like a parole violation off of something, like, you know, as dumb as having, like, a little bit of weed on them, right? And, like, it gets them back in the system. And, like, in a public health point of view, then that system, they've got them all locked up. And that COVID just goes right through there, right?
Right.
Like, that ain't safe, right?
No.
But then thinking about, like, how do we start thinking about public health from a way that's really centered around, like, bringing everyone up, right?
Right.
And so when we talk about substance abuse and, like, decriminalization and harm reduction is really critical, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the first thing we need to do is make sure that people can be as safe as possible, right?
Right.
And so, like, for me, that means, you know, safe injection sites so that people who are going to use IV drugs have a safe way to do that, and that there's, you know, there's Narcan right there and whatever. Because, like, even if you want to get clean, you're not going to just do it because it's illegal to have drugs, or, like, you know, you just want to get into that housing or whatever. That's a real big lift, right?
It is.
And, like, we have to support people where they are.
I agree, man.
And if they want to, like, and if they want to get clean and they're like, yeah, I want to get a job, I want to get clean and all this, like, we can give them that support as long as we can engage with them, right? And a policing-based way doesn't do that. Like, there's nothing. Like, everyone keeps trying. You know, there have been a lot of trials around, like, let's figure out how we can do some rehab in the prisons, or, like, we can we can do some education in the prisons and whatever. But, like, we never really think about, like, how does the system keep pulling you back in? You know, how does the system keep keeping you down?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part. Like, that's the real work. Because, like, until you lift that threat,
right,
you can't do that work.
Hey, that's real talk, man. So your whole premise and your whole platform is the police, the abolishment, defunding it, restructuring the public health around it, the communities around it, and then Minneapolis will prosper.
I mean, and then we got a whole 100 other things to do, right?
Right, we do.
But, like,
we do.
Right? Right? It's like, yes, that video game. You got to beat the boss in front of you before you go on to that next level. And we got a pretty big boss in front of us that we're trying to beat.
Did you got all those other people on the city council that you got to battle with, too?
I mean,
well, some of them aren't running again, right?
I mean, some of them, but there's some that are running that are real big fans of more police. And
What are their names? Let's name them.
Name
them.
I'm gonna go with, like, my biggest personal disappointment. Andrea Jenkins.
Man.
Come on, man. That just broke my heart. That really broke my heart.
That did. You know what? Not a lot of people have said that, and we need to name that, because that's important right there.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Because people haven't said anything about her at all,
and there's hardly anyone running against her, and, like,
no. And you know what? From what I've been reading, that she's behind the removal, wanting to remove George Floyd Square and open up that intersection again.
I mean, she's basically said it. I mean, there's none of this. It's not a rumor.
No.
So she's co-opted?
Is that the word we could use?
Sounds like it. You know what I mean? Because you know how it always is. It's like they all these people, politicians specifically, will say this, that, and the other thing. But once those money bucks people, the investors, start pissing and moaning, and they start doing a different song and dance.
Right.
Look at the mayor. The prime example of that.
Really? You think?
Shuck and jive.
But do you ever think he was on the other side?
Who?
The mayor.
No.
All right, then.
Never.
Personally. Because,
like, I was like, there was no turn there. He would, you know.
Personally.
When he was on council, he was the same.
On paper, like, you see him, you're like, well, he seems decent. But it's like, my personal belief, I don't think anybody should be the mayor of Minneapolis who didn't grow up here. That dude is from the East Coast. He came here and he's lived here a certain amount of years and now magically becomes the fucking mayor. Like, he doesn't know what Minneapolis is it's about.
I'm going to challenge that because, let's start with the fact that, for one, I think the mayor is the worst job in Minneapolis and I never want it. All right? You can put a flag in that. Like, come back to me. If I ever run for mayor, you'd be like, Willie, we got it on tape.
It'll be a rewinded tape.
Yeah, you'd be like, and you just, you know, we'll make the fake rewinding thing, and the only people old as me can, like, understand, like,
bum,
what it's.
Bum,
right? It's just like, worst job in Minneapolis. I don't ever want it. But, like, I think a lot of times we think about, like, where someone grew up and whatever. And I didn't grow up here, but I chose here, right? And I've been here for a long time. I grew up in South Florida. And, you know,
You're a Florida man?
It's terrible. I am exactly a Florida man. All those headlines, that was me, you know.
Bath salts.
Yep. No pants, gator, that was me. All of it. Anyway, so getting back to this, like, I think I think a lot of times we get into these things, and I think like the biggest thing that I want to see from someone who wants to be mayor is like a real understanding and grounding in the whole of the city, you know? Like, it's really easy to have one view of Minneapolis from the 12th Ward or the 13th Ward or whatever, you know? But like, when I first moved here, I moved to Whittier, and like, that's a very different feeling, especially like right there on 3rd and Franklin. I'm just like, this is not the same as living down here on the 12th Ward. And so I think there's a lot of lived experience that's really important to like have that grounding, but like, whether you came from here or what, I don't know. It ain't the most important thing. And I think a lot of Minnesotans are like really like a little too hot on that.
Well, I understand that. We're the largest small town you ever live in.
Oh my God, yes. But every time I go somewhere, it's just like seven people I know are just like, Willie, hey, and then, yeah.
See, my thing is, I don't have a problem when it's a city council or whatever.
Yeah.
I just personally believe he didn't. If you live here for 20 years, it's a different story. He hasn't lived here that long.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm no fan of his, so you know.
But you know what I mean? It, like, Norm Coleman was another dude, came from Jersey. And all of a sudden, he's running for governor and got him. Like, who the fuck is this dude?
Yeah.
He doesn't know Minnesota like shit. Now he's up there fucking spouting off his shit because he wants to run for president at some point.
Yeah, he got his teeth fixed, too. Remember that? His teeth were torn up, and then he started...
Crocodile teeth.
Yeah. Then they put those chiclets in there.
Yeah.
They're fixing them up. No, but so
maybe,
that's...
You know, when I lose the mask, maybe I'll call his dentist.
Willie, you got some jacked up teeth, bro.
You know, I grew up poor.
He's from Florida.
Exactly, I'm from Florida. But like, I grew up poor, and so like, we didn't really go to the dentist and all that. And if you don't go to the dentist when you're young, you don't build these good habits of going to the dentist.
Right.
And so like, I got a little coffee stain, and I got a little crooked tooth or whatever. I still think I have a fetching smile.
Right.
But like, I don't have no Norm Coleman style, you know. And that might look a little funny in my big brown queer face, this perfect, like, you know, American smile might look a little weird. But.
This Photoshop.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like fake news.
Well, no, maybe. I mean, like, seriously, though, if someone lives here and understands, I think, to me, the whole spiel, then I feel a little bit better about it. But I don't like him. And I think he's just another guy trying to. It seems to me a lot of people come here as a like a boost to the next level.
Yeah, I mean there definitely is that, like the politicians looking for space, and like it's kind of weird and kind of creepy and like that, you know.
Look at old girl, Klobuchar.
Yes,
she's a prime example. I mean, she grew up here. Yeah. But she was definitely climbing that ladder fast.
Well, she made her money on locking up black kids, so.
Yeah, yeah.
And she locked up a lot of black kids.
And she ain't said shit about it yet.
Nope. Another one.
Yeah.
Co-opted.
I don't know.
She wasn't ever co-opted.
She didn't.
But she, you know,
I never felt like she was our girl.
The DFLer.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, but like.
But in here, what before we leave, we only got a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to bring it back to a couple of things.
Yeah.
So housing.
Yeah.
Healthcare.
Yeah.
Abolishing the police.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What about, and you talked a little bit about public health, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I get that piece. What about healthcare for everybody?
Oh, man. So my wife's a doctor. Okay. At HCMC. So, you know, basically when you can't get healthcare anywhere, you end up at HCMC.
Right.
And so, you know, I hear those stories, and they're the worst. You know, the absolute worst, because the whole system is just totally effed up.
Right.
And at a city level, you know, trying to figure out what we can do, it's pretty hard.
Right.
But, like, as a person, right, as a person with ideas and, like, passions, absolutely, we need to get some way that everyone is covered. And this whole idea that I can go through the market is absurd. And, you know, if we were able to get people into a singular plan, that would really lower those costs and make that workable. There's a whole bunch of tweaking that has to happen to the system to make that work. Because right now, Medicare plays really low rates because they can get away with it because the rest of the system is screwing so many other people.
Right.
But if everyone paid Medicare rates, maybe we couldn't pay the bills. at the hospitals like HCMC. Right. Now, so there's some tweaking that has to happen there.
Yeah.
But like, absolutely, we have to figure out some way. And in the city of Minneapolis, I don't know if we have enough leverage for that, but at the state level, we absolutely do. So you right. can, there's Minnesota Care, and if we can find ways to help people buy into that if they need to and really keep that cost down, I think there's some real, like, fruitful stuff there. I don't know how the city plays into that, but if somebody's got some great ideas, please let me know if I win this, because, like, I'm going to need some help to make that happen.
Oh, Jay.
Dave's your guy.
All right.
I will help you. I will definitely help you. Jay's pretty smart, too.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. Like, I don't think I'm the smartest person in any room. What I want to do is find out, like, who's done the work, right? Like, right. who understands this from a real, like, a real standpoint of people first, compassion and empathy first, mm-hmm. harm reduction, all of that. Like, I need people who understand that to be able to say, here's my expertise. You know, I got expertise in a handful of things. But the thing I'm probably best at is, like, being able to connect with people and understand what's going on with them mm-hmm. so that I can help process that somewhere else. And so, like, in my boring university technology career, I spent a lot of time talking to people and say, so I know that we don't do it this way. Why is that? Right? Right. Like, what are people worried about? What threatens you in that? Or, like, why isn't that a good idea? And just trying to tease all those things out and, like, finding a way for people to, like, all have these kind of decisions based on the people doing the work. You know, you can talk to managers all day, right? And they have all these great big ideas or whatever. But I don't think that really gets down to, like, how it hits the road, right?
Right.
And, like, finding a way to talk to regular people who are just trying to get it done,
mm-hmm.
that's where you find that, like, that's where you find that wisdom. That's where you find the real, like, the real things that, the real parts of the struggle, right?
Right.
And we gotta fix that. Like, we don't fix things in some, like, you know, high level, like, academic way.
Right.
You know, actually, pardon me for a second, where I talk about, like, the best academics are really talking to people on the ground. And, like, that's where that good work comes. But, like, when you get too far removed,
right.
Like, that, it's, you lose sight.
I agree. Well, for it's sure. been a great conversation. And we thank you for coming.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Really appreciate you.
It's been
looking
a pleasure.
Looking forward to interacting with you more.
Yeah.
And seeing your platform grow.
Yeah.
Your followers grow.
Yeah. If I say anything stupid out there, call me back and, like, let's talk about it.
Oh, right? We will. We
yeah.
will.
Yeah. Just bring me back and be like, Willie, we heard you.
Jay's real Minnesotan about that, though. He'll be waiting for you to slip up.
Oh, yeah. Come over here, okay? Oh, yeah. You betcha.
Yeah. Yeah, you just keep an eye on that, okay?
I got some special
Thank you all for listening. This has been Sticks and Stones with Jason Nevels and David Jeffries and our guest, Willie Lee.
Thanks.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to Sticks and Stones on KFAI Minneapolis. And thanks to our producer, Miss Hill.